Good morning, everybody, and welcome to St. Andrews and our racial justice group's presentation. I'd like to introduce a longtime member of our group, Maria Harwell.
Hey.
And Maria's put together, it's helped to put together this presentation today, which I think you'll find very informative. I might add that the racial justice group is kind of in transition, and very shortly we are going to become a social justice group as we take on implementation of LGBTQ and reconciling in Christ that the congregation voted on. So we will have a dual purpose going forward. So without further ado, Maria, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, like I said, I'm meeting with you all as a member of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church's racial justice group, but that name is going to be transitioning as we take on the LGBTQ task force activities. I use she, her pronouns. I've been with St. Andrew's about 2 decades or more, and I've been given this opportunity to talk with you all about these new incidents and the history of racial terror lynching in America. As we begin, I want to start with a land acknowledgement. We at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church acknowledge that in this space we are on the traditional lands of the Duwamish and Coast Salish people, a people that are still here, continuing to honor and bring to light their ancestral heritage. Now, as a disclaimer, I'm not an academic researcher or history expert. The research I'm bringing to you today comes from various sources that you can find on the printout on all the tables. We'll also make sure that that's available on the St. Andrew's Lutheran Church website later on. That's salc.church. This presentation will be fulfilling one of the actions our church committed to in the Congregation Council approved statement by our racial justice group in July of this year. I'm going to read that statement in full. On Saturday, June 25th, 2022, a black male carpenter found a noose hung in a shared storage trailer on a construction site in Redmond, Washington. A tool was taped to a noose with the carpenter's name written on it. As of issuing this statement, the incident is being investigated as a hate crime. This was not an isolated incident. It was discovered that in 2021 also, a black woman found several nooses at a construction site at the Redmond Microsoft campus, causing her to quit the industry after 14 years of working there. We know that the noose, an unambiguous symbol that evokes the lynchings during the era of Jim Crow, is employed not only to threaten and harass the victim, but also to instill racial terror. As members of the racial justice group of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in Bellevue, Washington, and with the full support of the Congregation Council, we condemn this cowardly and evil act and condemn all racially motivated threats, harassment, and violence. We issue this statement to fulfill our commitment made in the racial justice statement approved by Congregation Council in April 2021. Quote, recognizing the systemic racism and racial inequality in our community and nation, we acknowledge that we cannot remain silent, nor can we sit idly by. Remaining silent only contributes to injustice. We resolve to take the following actions, which serve as a starting point, but can be expanded upon as we continue to grow on our journey to true racial equity. We ask members of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church to learn about the history of lynching and racial terror in America using this website made by the Equal Justice Initiative, lynchinginamerica.eji.org. That's what you see up here. We will host a future discipleship forum covering the history of lynching in America. That's right now. We ask members of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church to donate to Eastside Embrace, a Redmond, Kirkland-based, and Black-led anti-racist group dedicated to enhancing diversity and racial justice in local communities and lifting up marginalized voices. They hosted Eastside honoring Juneteenth in Kirkland on June 18th. Their website is eastsideembrace.weebly.com. Congregation members are encouraged to contact the Racial Justice Group with any questions. So that's the end of the statement. You can read the statement yourself on the SALC website. The address for the statement is salc.church/racial-justice-group-statement. So, in that statement I just read to you, you heard the words, "We know that the noose and unambiguous symbol that evokes the lynchings during the era of Jim Crow, blah, blah, blah." However, the reality of the matter is that it can't always be assumed what any of us know about our nation's history when it comes to the national trauma of slavery and racism. I certainly have discovered in the time since George Floyd protests in 2020, there's a lot that I didn't know about the legacy of racism. That's why we in the Racial Justice Group decided it was important to host this forum and look at the actual details of the history of the news and why it is such an unambiguous symbol of racial terror. We do want to clarify some things just up front so all of us are on the same page as we dive into this difficult topic. Our intent is not to shame anyone or lay a guilt trip on weak white people. The reason it is so important that we go over this now is the following. So slavery was a terrible mistake our country made. There is no way we can excuse the fact that we allowed human beings to be sold into slavery for our use as labor. It led to a civil war that tore our country apart. The remnants of this war still haunt us to this day. Our country has tried to bury this dark past ever since. The history books don't mention it or gloss over it. Many history books used when we went to school presented slavery from a white person's viewpoint, which diminishes the magnitude of pain and suffering inflicted upon black people. Our reluctance to admit this wrongdoing and seek forgiveness and make meaningful reparations keep us from healing and moving forward as a diverse and inclusive society. Right now, there is pushback happening against wokeness with an inaccurate perception that acknowledging the truth will somehow divide the country and form protests or violence. But the Racial Justice Group believes that acknowledging this history is absolutely necessary to begin healing and to achieve genuine racial equity. On June 11th in 2020, King County declared racism a public health crisis, and municipalities and counties across America have done the same. This speaks to the urgency needed for directly facing our country's racist history head on. So, usually these discipleship forums here, they're often dedicated to catching us all up on what's been done or what are we planning for the future. But today's presentation is instead really meant as a sincere, even desperate, call to action for everyone today, everyone here and everyone watching this at home. It means a lot to me that you're here with me right now and willing to look at our nation's history through a critical lens. But what will mean even more to me is what you decide to do after this time and you return to your daily lives. What conversations will you have? What connections will you reach out to foster? What injustices will you stand up to, even if it risks your social or economic position to do so? We do have one action to report, though. Our Building and Property Committee will be installing a temporary sign on the corner of 146th Avenue. This sign will feature the Reconciling in Christ rainbow logo and also a Black Lives Matter logo. This sign is a first step in recognizing the healing that needs to take place and letting our neighbors know everyone is welcomed here as equal children of God. What additional steps would you all like to see St. Andrews take to reach out to our brown and black neighbors? Please keep these questions in your heart throughout this presentation and as you process these difficult discussions. And these are difficult discussions. They will take processing. So right now, I just want everyone to take a moment and I want to ground ourselves before we proceed, okay? I'd like you to just take a few moments, quietly check in with yourself. You can close your eyes if you feel up to it. How are you feeling? How is your body responding to this topic of racism? Whatever you feel, however your body is responding, that is okay. I want you to recognize how you feel and accept those feelings, no matter what they are. So take just like 5 seconds. So, now that you've checked in with yourself, I'd like you to keep that awareness up in the back of your mind as we continue. When we face uncomfortable topics like this, it's very natural for our body to react in one way or another, and I don't want you to feel bad about the way you feel. We are all human beings created by God, and feeling is what we do. What you can do instead is ask yourself why you feel a certain way. Why is your body reacting to this in a certain way? I found that to be really helpful when I've been encountering uncomfortable truths like those we'll talk about today. So, thank you so much for being with me today here. So, this is an interactive website. This is Lynching in America. It was created by Equal Justice Initiative. If you haven't heard of the Equal Justice Initiative, EJI is a nonprofit organization based in Montgomery, Alabama, that provides legal representation to prisoners who may have been wrongly convicted of crimes, poor prisoners without effective representation, and others who may have been denied a fair trial. Some of you may be wondering, okay, if EJI is an organization focused on legal representation for prisoners, why did they do this report about the history of lynching? And that's an excellent question. In fact, EJI says this in the beginning of their report, quote, "Lynching reinforced a legacy of racial inequality that has never been adequately addressed in America. The administration of criminal justice, in particular, is tangled with the history of lynching in profound and important ways that continue to contaminate the integrity and fairness of the justice system." They also go on to say, quote, "The history of terror lynching complicates contemporary issues of race, punishment, crime, and justice. Mass incarceration, excessive penal punishment, disproportionate sentencing of racial minorities, and police abuse of people of color reveal problems in American society that were framed in the terror era," end quote. So we're going to browse through this website together here. I'd like to move through this website with you all and just show you what tools are available on it. It's very important that you take some time on your own to engage with this material, and that way you can do it at your own pace and in your own way so that you can best access this information. The printout you got lists this website at the very top. I hope you all find time later today or tomorrow to go here and explore it yourself. I'm viewing the website using this laptop, but you can also access it on your smartphone. So I'm going to read this aloud now. This site features painful stories of America's history of racial injustice. In order to heal the deep wounds of our present, we must face the truth of our past. After slavery was formally abolished, lynching emerged as a vicious tool of racial control to reestablish white supremacy and suppress Black civil rights. More than 4,000 African Americans were lynched across 20 states between 1877 and 1950. These lynchings were public acts of racial terrorism intended to instill fear in entire Black communities. Government officials frequently turned a blind eye or condoned the mob violence. The effects of racial terror lynchings are still felt today. So this page here acts as the website's main menu. Anytime you're looking at something on this website, if you want to return to this main menu, you just want to look for the symbol at the top right corner of the page. It'll look like two white lines, and you can click that, and it'll return you to this menu. So as you can see here, there's a few options. Listen, right up there, is a collection of short audio stories from generations affected by lynching. And then Watch, which we're going to take a look at together soon here. Actually, I left that out of the presentation in the final draft, sorry. It's a short 7-minute film exploring one family's painful past and journey south. Explore shows you interactive maps illustrating the impact of lynching. Learn More directs you to a link that you can click, and it will take you to a form to fill out if you'd like to receive email updates from the EJI. I signed up for it just last week. The report here is the full Lynching in America report. It's in its third edition. And Yvonne will just give you more information about Equal Justice Initiative. So here are the short audio stories. There's 6 of them. We don't have time to listen to them today, so I really hope you go to this website yourself and hear these people's stories. These are people whose families were forever impacted by racial terror and lynchings. And this is the short film. It's just under 7 minutes long, and it follows this family who's going back to their family's home in Louisiana and learning about their great-grandfather, Thomas Miles Sr., who was lynched in 1912 for allegedly passing a note to a white woman. I'd love you to check this out on your own time as well. It's very emotional and very personal. I love what the lady my age says about needing to educate ourselves about this history in order to move forward. And here's one of the interactive maps. Ooh, we'll see how the internet loads. Oh dear. Anyway, at the top left it says racial terror lynchings. Racial terror lynchings were not limited to the South, but the southern states had the most in the nation, over 4,000 between 1877 and 1950. Mm-hmm. So if there was a map showing, which unfortunately it's not showing today, but if you go to check this out yourself, you can basically move your cursor over a map of the United States, and each state that had at least one racial terror lynching, when your cursor moves over it, it'll be highlighted, and it'll show you the number of lynchings that EJI's reporting found. Not only that, but there's these red splotches across the map. You can even see the key in the bottom right here. It'll show you the brightest color red. It shows you the counties that have the highest number of lynchings in each state. So if you click on a state, the map zooms in, and you can hover your mouse over that little county, and it'll show you the name of the county and the number of lynchings there. And if you check it out yourself, oh, it's finally loading. Unfortunately, we don't have a big enough screen. Oregon is obscured, but Oregon, we actually had a lynching in the Pacific Northwest that I had never heard of before. I don't know if any of you have, but Coos County in Oregon. So if you basically, you can explore this. Maybe you have family history in other states in America. You can go check this out. And what I recommend is that just open another tab and do an internet search for the name of the county and lynching, and you should be able to find some articles, especially with the George Floyd protests. There's been more and more motivation for people to reconcile this history of lynching in their locales, and they're trying to find that strength.
Quick question.
Yeah.
So I pulled this up on my phone real quick.
Yeah.
And there's like a on the mobile at least, I don't see it up here.
Sure.
There's a few different options it gives you for viewing, and one of those viewing by state, so I was able to quickly pull up Oregon.
Yep.
Some states are missing. Does that mean they don't have data on it?
Right.
Okay.
Basically, this map is based on the most recent edition of EJI's Lynching in America. So this is based on all of the research they did, which was very extensive. They found hundreds more lynchings that had previously been recorded in our history. If there's a state that doesn't have a lynching in it, that's because we haven't found out about it yet. That doesn't mean we're not going to in the future. So yeah. And I actually was about to kind of go into that. Like I said, this report's in its 3rd edition. Researchers keep finding more evidence of lynching that were lost to time or silenced by the media or the white community in our past. So I want to really try and encourage you all to become your own researchers and take the initiative to uncover this history. Hopefully you can share what you've learned with your loved ones and have these important conversations. And then here is the second map on the website. It automatically starts playing, as you can see there. So the text at the top left says, more than 6 million African Americans fled the South in the first half of the 20th century. Terror lynchings and other racial violence played a key role in this forced migration of Black Americans to the North and West. Many fled in fear for their lives.
So the different shades of gray here represent the states where the U.S. population of African Americans lived. And I can click and drag this slider here and change which decade to look at. Where is my mouse? There it is. So, as you can see, Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama had a large percentage of the African American population. But as we move the slider, the population shifts to the north and to the west as African Americans fled from racial terrorism. During my research, I came across more than one voice who referred to these people as refugees in their own country. And this is where you can sign up for more information from EJI. And lastly, you can access the latest edition of the report titled Lynching in America, Confronting the Legacy of Racial Terror. So the button in the center will take you to the online version of the report. But in addition to that, at the bottom right down here, you can download the report as a PDF. And if you're an educator, you can check out EJI's high school lesson plan right here. So this is a 77-page long report. I do not feel at all equipped to best summarize this and all the contents. And I honestly wouldn't really want to either. I read this report in full.
Oh. It's still loading.
It's still loading.
I actually read this in full during my research for this presentation, and I was really impressed at how accessible it is while still being really honest about what happened during this racial terror era in America's past. Again, going to plead and beg, please, 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 if you're committed to learning about this topic in the most thorough historical context possible, I hope you read this online. Or maybe you could do what I did. I printed it out and stapled it together, and I just kind of brought it with me and read a little bit by bit over multiple days. Let's see here. The table of contents here can give you a vague idea of what's in the report. It formats itself in a linear timeline. It starts with 1861, when the southern states seceded, and then emancipation. We move on to the Reconstruction era, the lynching era, and the characteristics of it, and so on. I have a 5-minute video. I was going to cue that up, and I forgot. It's going to be narrated by EJI's founder, Brian Stevenson, an attorney. An activist. This video will discuss several examples of lynchings that occurred. So, I want to remind everyone to take a deep breath and keep that mindfulness going. Keep track of how you feel as you hear this history, okay? So, we're going to watch this together after it loads. Parental discretion advised. There's nothing extremely graphic. There's no photos. This is a painted, animated painting, basically. It's very artistic. Okay.
After slavery was prohibited in 1865, formerly enslaved people in America were granted full citizenship, the right to vote, and under the 14th Amendment, protection from racial violence. Formerly enslaved people were promised land and opportunity, but most got nothing because America quickly devolved into an era of racial terrorism and oppression for black citizens. White people in the South were angry that people formerly considered property were now equal citizens. Many turned to violence. In the years immediately following the Civil War, thousands of black people were murdered when they tried to claim their rights. Soon afterwards, federal troops were withdrawn from the South, ending a brief period of racial progress known as Reconstruction. Nationwide resistance to racial equality resulted in the reestablishment of racial subordination through bias laws, disenfranchisement, and terrorism most dramatically enforced through lynchings. Racial terror lynchings of black people defined a shameful era in America. These lynchings differed from the hanging of white people in places where there was no functioning criminal justice system. Racial terror lynchings were directed at all black people. They enforced compliance with racial hierarchy and white supremacy and ensured racial segregation and denial of equal rights. In 1916, in Cedar Bluff, Mississippi, a young black man named Jeff Brown accidentally bumped into a white woman while running to catch a train. A white mob stopped him and lynched him, beating him and then hanging him from a tree for his insolence and carelessness. His public murder was not about criminal punishment, but was instead about maintaining racial hierarchy and terrorizing the black community. White town residents proudly sold photographs of Mr. Brown's brutalized body hanging from the tree for 5 cents each. The Equal Justice Initiative has documented thousands of racial terror lynchings between 1877 and 1950. EJI has confirmed the lynchings of over 4,000 black people who were tortured, maimed, beaten, shot, hung, and burned alive by crowds of white people, often with the cooperation of law enforcement or government officials. The terror of lynching was so widespread that millions of black people fled the South and settled in the urban North and West as refugees of American terror, shaping the current demographic geography of the United States. On July 5, 1933, an older black woman named Elizabeth Lawrence reprimanded a group of white children who threw rocks at her as she walked home from work. Word spread that a black woman had dared to rebuke white children, and that night, an angry mob of white citizens lynched Ms. Lawrence for her audacity. Her home was then burned to the ground. Her son, Alexander, fled to Boston. Racial terror lynchings often had the atmosphere of carnivals, with food vendors and souvenir stands. Hundreds or thousands of white people would often gather to watch and take part in the torture and murder of black citizens. There has been no effort in America to confront this legacy of racial terror. While hundreds of Confederate monuments litter the landscape in southern states, there has been no public recognition of the violence endured by black people. On October 7, 1910, a white mob in Montgomery, Alabama tried to abduct and lynch black men being held in jail on suspicion of miscegenation or interracial sexual relations. When they were unable to get the men out of the jail, the frustrated mob lynched a black taxi driver named John Dell, who was sitting in his cab nearby. No one was ever arrested or prosecuted for his murder. EJI's Community Remembrance Project collects soil from the many sites where terror lynchings occurred. Jars labeled with the names of murdered black citizens are on public display at EJI, a powerful visual reminder of history we must face. EJI is working to create a permanent memorial to honor victims of lynching, a place to reflect on America's history of racial violence. We hope to place historical markers at hundreds of lynching sites around the country. Contemporary issues like police violence, excessive punishment in the criminal justice system, and even harsh and punitive treatment of children of color in schools and on streets cannot be understood without a deeper examination into our history of racial violence. More truthful discourse and reflection on our history of racial injustice is essential for us to achieve racial equity. Confronting the legacy of lynching is critical to advancing this conversation. We hope you will join our effort to help towns, cities, and states confront and recover from these tragic histories of racial violence through truth and reconciliation, where there can truly be equal justice for all.
Okay. So, how are we all doing? I have a question. If you could use one word to describe what you're thinking or feeling, I'd like to invite you to say it out loud. I'll repeat it into the microphone so we can hear it. Sad. Sad.
Shame.
Shame.
Disgraceful.
Disgraceful.
Anger.
Anger. Yeah. Horror. Horror. I have another question. If anyone is feeling up to answering, was there anything in that video that came as a surprise to you personally? Or was there anything there that you learned for the first time today? Or maybe something there that you weren't taught in school, but you learned later on in life and you wish you had been taught in school? But one here and then one over there.
I didn't know about the carnival atmosphere and the selling of souvenirs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was never taught that.
Yeah, so commenting that it's not really well known that was a really unfortunately common occurrence for it to be a carnival atmosphere. People would bring their children to watch this. And if that's a really important element that I learned in the research is that parents were really teaching their children this culture, this behavior.
I wasn't taught any of that in school until I was in college.
College is when you learned it.
It's when I learned, but also when I worked in the prison system for 31 years, so
yep, the prison
system.
A lot
of things there, but going to South Carolina and Louisiana,
yep,
where I saw big areas bigger than this whole fellowship hall that were just used to sell and auction off slaves.
Yep.
It's very sad. And it's still an old, they're still there. They just use them now for craft bazaars and things like that.
But, right. That slavery history has been repurposed for something else.
Right.
And I assume there's no memorial. There's no act.
Well, there were the times that I've been there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been an effort, like as you saw at the end there, EJI and other people as well in the South are doing a lot of work to try to reconcile that history and actually put historical markers at these sites and places where lynchings happened or slavery, because they, you know, there's all these Confederate statues and markers, and yet they're not also having markers for the shameful past.
Oh, so, I was going to say, too, like in Stone Mountain, Georgia, which is close to Havana,
yep,
where they have the carving of the stones with all the Confederate presidents or whatever,
yep,
they're very proud of that. I mean, I know there's been some talk recently about whether that ought to be there, but they've been very proud of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of an effort to remember Confederate history and not a lot of effort to remember this history. And it's a really stark contrast. So I want to begin to express my appreciation to you all for being here and including yourself in this discussion. And just like we saw in the last panel of that series, the path forward involves people talking to each other, right? We have to have the courage to talk about it, even though it's really scary. So with the time left, I want to make sure we talk very specifically about this new contemporary form of racial terror, the display of nooses in public, in schools, at workplaces, or in front of homes. The next major source I used talks about this phenomenon. It's an academic article. The Hangman's Noose and the Lynch Mob, Hate Speech in the Den of Six, written by Professor of Law Jeanine Bell in 2009. So in this article, Professor Bell addresses, quote, issues of hate speech raised by symbols like the nooses hung from a tree at the high school in Jena. This high school that she refers to is Jena High School in Louisiana, where in 2006, white students hung nooses from a tree in the center of the campus the day after a school assembly where a black student had asked their vice principal if black students were allowed to sit under the tree, and the vice principal had said anyone could sit under it. I found this whole article incredibly helpful in capturing just how alarmingly common noose incidents really are in this country and have been for decades at this point. And keep in mind, this was published in 2009. It's 2022 now. So she says, quote, in 2000, a reporter interviewed officials at the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, about the agency's handling of dozens of allegations of workplace discrimination cases involving nooses from around the country. At that time, noose-related lawsuits represented a high number of EEOC racial harassment cases. Employment lawyers who worked in the private sector had also noticed an increase in noose incidents in both small and large companies. In the next paragraph, she also says, quote, a survey of recent employment discrimination cases reveals that white workers have hung nooses in their own personal workplaces for black workers to see, left nooses or pictures of nooses in work and black workers' workstations, and placed nooses in common areas. With respect to cases in which lawsuits are eventually brought, many of the nooses appear in blue-collar workplaces, among service workers, in warehouses, and within construction and trucking companies. Often the noose is just one of a series of allegedly racially charged incidents occurring in the workplace. So Professor Bell wrote this academic report in 2009 based on cases she was able to find at that time. It's now 2022. 13 years later, the reality is that it's still happening. I read that paragraph from her report, and I was really taken aback at how it even mentions construction specifically. It mentions, quote, often the noose is just one of a series of allegedly racially charged incidents occurring in workplace. So the thing is, I found an article from the Seattle Medium. Oh, that's right. I wasn't able to find it up here, but I found an article that you can look it up yourself. It's mentioned on this printout, which is a Seattle-based African-American newspaper that includes an interview with the worker in Redmond who found the news at his workstation with his name written on it. I've printed out copies so everyone can see it. The worker's name is James Myers. So the article says, quote, according to Myers, this was not the first time he has been subjected to racially offensive incidents while working at the site, but this latest incident was one that he could not ignore. Myers claims that he has worked in a racially hostile environment since starting his new position at BNB Builders. From being called black boy to derogatory statements involving picking cotton that culminated into someone hanging a noose at his workstation, Myers believes that his presence was not wanted at the job site. The other employees just would make racial jokes all day long, says Myers. There were a lot of black jokes like, hey, black boy, do this. And I'd reply, I'm not your black boy. And they're doing this trying to be funny, sarcastic. But for me, it wasn't funny at all, end quote. As of July, BN Builders confirmed to news outlets that three individuals were terminated for their involvement, and the supervisor of the Pacific Northwest chapter of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters has expressed his condemnation of the incident as well and agreed with the terminations of the members of his union, which I was very encouraged to see. Solidarity like that is absolutely vital after incidents like these. I found that there is a Safe from Hate pledge that contractors, union leaders, trade groups, and other stakeholders can sign as a means of promising a work environment with zero tolerance policy for harassment or hate, promising training, and so forth. I was really happy to see that pledge, but then I was frustrated to see that the Pacific Northwest chapter carpenters were on that pledge already. They'd made that pledge on Safe from Hate, and yet this still happened this past summer. So, at the end of the Seattle Medium article, it says, quote, although his spirit may have been dampened, Myers says that he will not let this incident deter him from bettering himself and providing for his family. This experience may have been hurtful, but I'm going to stand strong, says Myers. For my family, my children, my community, things like this have to stop, and I'm going to fight it till the end. When I see those words, how can I not want to join that fight with him? I think that's what I take away from this, is that even in the face of this seemingly never-ending fight against racism, we must not give in to despair. This fight has been going on for a long time already, and we have a lot to learn from those who fought it before us.
Don't keep worrying about fighting a good fight.
But keep fighting the good fight. That's what I think. So that's all I have to share this morning. We're running out of time, but thank you so much for spending your time here with us. If anyone has any questions or discussions, we have about 15 minutes until service starts. Any questions about the items on the printout. There's Seattle Times article. There's the Seattle Medium article printed in full behind the list of materials. This was such a huge topic that I ended up using a lot of the presentation just kind of trying to give you guys the tools to look at this information yourself. There are so many details that can't be crammed into a 30-minute presentation. I didn't even mention, you know, the reason we know about these lynchings is great thanks to Ida B. Wells, pioneer of journalism. She traveled, you know, at the risk of her safety to report on all these lynchings that were happening in the South.
Yep. Well, it's just an idea. I've been pondering this topic of microaggressions, and I don't fully understand that topic, but it might be an interesting forum in the future to take a dive into what microaggressions are, how they work their way accidentally into our own behaviors, and maybe help us reflect more on how we treat other people. Maybe that's a step that we could do to build upon this knowledge. Just take a look at how we interact with all our neighbors and things that accidentally might frustrate them or hurt them.
Yeah, like stuff that they keep quiet about it because they don't want to, you know, rock the boat.
Yeah, maybe how to intervene when we see somebody else doing something.
Racial Justice Group has had some conversations about intervention techniques and possible, like, information we can pass on to the congregation, so that's definitely been on the table. A big concern is, you know, it comes down to, you know, comfort level when it comes to interventions if you're seeing racial harassment happening, so we're wanting to make sure to do the topic really properly. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a good idea.
Thank you, Maria. This was great.
Thank you guys for being here. Awesome.
Thank you.